Good afternoon, Barcelona. How are we doing? All right? Good tech head so far? Got some sleep last night, hopefully a couple of hours. I think some of my colleagues were up till God knows when, but I got an early night because I wanted to give time and respect to you this morning. I'm Andrew Fryer. I'm a technical evangelist at Microsoft in the UK, and this is...
My name's Ed Baker. I'm also a technical evangelist in the UK. We're from the IT Pro team specifically, but that doesn't stop us talking lots of other topics like...
So my name's Susan Smith. I'm also an IT Pro evangelist in DX UK, and I talk a lot about DevOps.
Right, so we thought we'd put this session together and do something a little bit different for you, because we've been talking to a lot of IT pros and there's a little bit of uncertainty out there about this thing called the future. Yeah? So next roles, next skills, staying relevant in an evolving IT world. That's a bit, I just want to call it next, but they wouldn't let me do that. So, you know, because you'll get used to doing that thing, don't you? So, this is us. And there's a link at the bottom of the screen. Can you all get your devices out and go to that link, please? Because we're going to do this live. We want to be a bit more unplugged, a little bit different. I must also apologise to the Microsoft people in the room. This is running on AWS.
It's a bit slow.
Yeah, we haven't got that thing
yet. The
point
about this poll is that it's a wonderful system, but you have to pay for it, and we have up to 200 responses on every question. So the first... quickest 200 people answer our questions, that's what we'll know. You'll see the poll come up.
So it's a bit of fun, right?
So the first question, guys, is why did you come to Tech Ed Europe? Do you want to discover new technology? Do you want to network with product teams? Discover best practice for implementing the next big picture? And there are those of you, I can name some in the room, yeah, possibly, who think, yeah, Barcelona in October is great.
I think they're the marketing team we've brought with us then.
I couldn't possibly comment on that.
Discover new technology, seek out new civilizations.
Looks like everyone's here for the right reasons.
Okay, that's pretty good. I think we'll stop that one there, because that's just to get you warmed up, obviously.
Okay. Serious question. Are you still doing the same things at work, regardless of the job you're doing and where you're doing? Are you doing the same sort of technical things at work as you did 5 years ago?
Quite good fun. So.
So regardless of the industry changing, we're seeing here a 6-1, maybe 5-1, maths are awful, a 5-1 proof that whatever you're doing, and regardless of the industry, you're changing what you do regularly.
So when I came to Barcelona, last time I was in Barcelona, it must have been about five, six years ago. Anyone at that tech ed? Yeah? How many sessions were there on cloud? Not so many, right? Okay, let's roll on to the next ones. We're just getting some feedback here so we can
Andrew,
give you...
Andrew, don't press that slide.
You're
not on that one, it's on this one.
It's that one.
Thank you.
Thank you, sorry.
That's
sorry.
All right.
Not very good with PowerPoint, mainly PowerShell.
So, as a result of that, those of you that answered the previous question, do you see your role changing and the tasks you're going to be carrying out changing in the next 5 years? See, I told you we picked the right questions.
Well,
that's,
I think we've got
really
the right
encouraging.
Crowd. We are preaching a little bit.
So there's a good job we're here. We're here for the right reason, then. People want to listen to this
preaching
stuff.
Preaching to the choir. Some of you, I guess, got your boss to pay for you to come here. We could do hands on that one. We should have put that in as a question.
Yeah.
Anyone get the company to pay for them? Excellent. I'm liking the influencing skills.
Let's ask some more. Who's actually paid themselves with their own money to be here? 50-50, the boss paid half of it.
Well, and
but that's your money you've paid half of. That's a lot of money.
There is another way, though. Who won a ticket to come here?
Oh.
Respect. Okay, because we did run a competition in the UK to do that.
So the final question, are you happy that what you did 5 years ago you're not doing now, or what you're going to be doing in 5 years' time is going to be different? So are you embracing the change? Do you enjoy that fact?
I think we've done
or are
it.
You
I think...
Or are you sitting there saying, no, I don't want to be doing that?
So we've got a lot of happy people out there.
We have got a lot of happy people. We should probably just go now, because have we got anything to tell them? Well, let's have a look.
What number are we? Well, back to PP. Okay.
We are, back to PP. Right, so...
Nobody's laughed at this picture yet.
No, they haven't, have they? No.
This is what we look like on a night out.
Yeah, this is us in the Ramblas last night.
They're now very scared.
Right. Okay, so we can probably agree then that there is fundamental change going on. and not some industry hype. When we talk about the cloud, we can press a button and make it happen. You know, if I can go into Virtual Machine Manager, hit a button and say create cloud, that's kind of real then, isn't it? And if we've seen, some of you have seen the Windows Azure pack and that CPS gadget they've got sitting down the exhibitors hall, that's pretty impressive stuff, and making Azure work on your own data center. So things are changing. And what we wanted to do was share with you some research that we've done in the UK about what's happening there. So this is a slide from our Microsoft Technology Centres, the NTCs that are around the world. We've got one in the UK. There are some other ones. I'm not sure where the rest are them in Europe. So we started to see these job names changing. Now, it's just a bit of a fun eye test kind of thing, and we three of us decided to present on this because we've all got a different area of this graph, except for poor Ed.
Can I get some feedback, please?
Yes.
Anybody in the room is a server hugger, a tin lover that likes playing with bits of physical kit? We're not on here, fellas. I disagree with this slide, I'm sorry. I think there is a future. No matter how much virtualization we're doing, it's still got to run on something physical, hasn't it?
Yeah.
So there has to be a role somewhere for some form of server hugger.
But if I did a graph of number of servers you looked after, used to be physical, now virtual, you know, that's going from...
But 80% of the skills in virtualization, I'm still managing the operating system that is on the physical server, so you still need the same technical operating system skills.
Exactly. So that's kind of continuing to be there. So...
Stop the poll.
I thought I would open the batting by talking to you about this thing called data science. I've got my data science question, Ed, actually. Can we just cut to that first?
They've started answering that.
They've started answering already.
I switched slides and didn't
Everyone's
stop
pretty keen on the poll.
Yeah.
So this always makes me smile. The most common business intelligence tool on the planet is still Excel, closely followed by a crystal ball. You know, people make decisions on the golf club. I mean, I don't know how you decided which car to buy next. Was it running the numbers, or was it just you like the colour? Or the fact your wife thought it was, you know, very comfortable to sit in.
I'm enjoying the results of this slide because of number three.
So my wife does the car buying, by the way, so I don't get a look in. Can't be done in... So there's no SQL people in the house.
There's one standing there.
I'm hurt. So this thing, data science, at the bottom here is what I want to talk to you about for the next 15 minutes or so. And we're on number six.
PP. I'll drive.
You drive. Okay, so let's have a look at this, let's dig into this for a little bit.
You have to press it hard and it takes a while.
Press it hard. So does anybody know what this is? It's a Mayan calendar. They spent a lot of time a few thousand years ago to work out when to plant crops. Yeah, they looked at a whole load of things, and what they eventually worked out using a whole load of regression analysis and advanced physics and so on was that the stars... If you understood where the stars were in the sky, you could actually work out when to plant your crops. So they developed this enormously complicated calendar, and they understood the precession of the equinoxes. So data science is nothing new. But what you have seen probably over the last couple of years, if you go onto job sites and surf for this stuff, is that there's a lot of people out there looking for data scientists, and there's a lot of people saying they are data scientists. All right. Now, that's just not saying that I used to muck about with Excel and now I kind of am a data scientist. It's more a recognition that this culture is changing and that we're actually starting to move to a business a bit like an airline pilot where we're trusting our instruments to make decisions. So if I think about coming into Barcelona Airport, it was actually raining when I came in. Rain follows us everywhere in England, I think. And... So if it's a bit cloudy and so on, how does the pilot know where he is? Well, he looks at his instruments. He doesn't kind of have a feel about which way the plane is up. He looks at some instruments. He doesn't guess where the airport is. He looks at his instruments. If you're running your business like that, then this stuff becomes quite interesting, okay? To actually put science into making your decisions, and that's why we use the word data science. And when I look at what kind of skills that we need... Well, I think it's three things, and any two from three is not such a good thing to have. Three out of three is good. You've got to have some knowledge of the business that you're in. For example, if I looked in Barcelona at the number of satellite dishes on apartment blocks here and looked at the increase in lung cancer, I could probably come up with a curve that looked roughly the same, and I would infer that satellite dishes cause lung cancer. And that would be wrong, wouldn't it? Because actually, of course, we know there's something else going on there. But those two trends probably both indicate an underlying trend in affluence that people can afford both to get lung cancer by smoking too much and also can afford a satellite dish. So you need to understand the business in order to understand what's going on with the numbers. You do also need to understand the numbers. You need some grounding in maths and statistics. When we were putting this deck together, rather than putting up some random slides saying, you know, 77% of IT pros were unhappy and making 67.66% of statistics up on the spot, we kind of ran that survey for you. So we wanted to put some science into this presentation. Curiosity is also important, the idea of playing, and sometimes in IT we forget that. We just kind of don't try things enough. Perhaps because we're too busy, perhaps because we're afraid of making idiots of ourselves. Now, in Microsoft, we have a big culture of making mistakes. Now, I mean that in a good way. I do not mean that, you know, the latest Windows 8 was a mistake and we did that deliberately. But what we try and do is we make that same mistake only once and we learn from it and we move on. And making a mistake means you've done something, all right? So this is all about experimentation and play and working out what might work and then rigorously testing that to see if it does work. Now, that technique works really, really well if you've got the business knowledge and some knowledge of maths, and then you can start to think about calling yourself a data scientist. But true data scientists, you know, when you see the hardcore job, are probably in the green hexagon, not so much knowledge of the business, maybe a little bit curious. So you move around these spaces. So what I want to suggest to you is a big market for everybody, and I've already paid off my mortgage, and I've got quite nice holidays, and I spent about 15 years working in the business intelligence field, and I'm doing okay. So I kind of get this. These guys are just laughing at me. Data, what's that all about? Ed will talk to you about backup and archiving, for example. Well, I would say to you, well, when you've made a backup of all those logs, and you've got all that stuff sitting in there about how your web servers are running, wouldn't it be a good idea to peer in there and try and get some insight into what's going on so that when things do go wrong, you've got some prediction going on so that you can carry on doing some other stuff? So I think that's quite important. So when I look at the key technologies you want to have a look at, there's a lot of announcements here. Yesterday, at the keynote, we heard briefly popped up on the screen was real-time analytics. And I learned about a new technology I hadn't really heard of coming out yet, Data Factory, last night. So if you go down to the exhibition hall, go and talk to the data platform guys. Data mining, on the other hand, has been around for a while, and big data's overhyped. We can all disagree about what big data is, but here's what I think it is. I think it's bigger than you can manage, whoever you are. Okay? It's bigger than you can fit in your data center. You can't download Twitter into your data center. It's not going to work. So we need another way of doing things. It's also about variety of data. Data mining is all about getting insights from other that you didn't know were there. You know that cross-correlation I just mentioned about smoking and satellite dishes, picking up weird things, maybe doing some seismic analysis and looking at how earthquakes behave and getting some sense of what's going on. But machine learning is the one I want to share with you because that's the one where we actually start to take all these techniques and actually come up with some actionable insight. We can make a decision. We used to talk about executive information systems, decision support systems. Machine learning is the new thing where we take some of these techniques and we make a prediction. And then we can service that out to people. So hopefully this is quite interesting stuff. And at this point, I might do something dangerous and do a demo. Now, moderately sure. So one of the things I found out this morning was that I've been doing so much work on machine learning, which is what I'm showing you here, that I ran out my MSDN subscription, so I have zero credit left. So here's a demo I prepared earlier.
It was interesting to watch the realisation of panic.
And then the zeros.
The three-week preparation of a demo suddenly wasn't going to work.
So has anybody looked at machine learning? And I thought I'd have a wide audience to just share with you. This may not be something you ever want to use. But if you want to understand maybe threat analysis, if you want to come up with customers, you want to make a decision about whether to offer somebody a loan, this technology is amazing. Now, this looks like a Visio diagram, doesn't it? As I scroll up and down here. And I want to basically call out a couple of things in here as I try and... I'm probably going to use a Zoom tool on here rather than anything else. And just scroll to the left and scroll to the right a little bit, wiggle it a little bit, and up again. This thing says... two-class boosted decision tree. Now, I could probably explain to you what that is over a coffee, but I'm not going to do that now. What you need to know is that this is a way of making a yes-no decision. And It's based on a ton of work that Microsoft uses these algorithms internally on Xbox One, on Bing. I know you kind of don't get Bing, but it is actually quite clever at picking up what you want to do rather than just serving up a load of websites based on advertising revenue. We're trying to get inside what you want to do, and that's why we use the data. This is kind of developed from those kinds of teams. Now, this idea, this algorithm here is going to try and work out whether my flights are late or not. But is it any good? Does it work? All the steps above are just going to clean the data. And then over on the right-hand side over here, I've got something called two-class logistic regression. Now, logistic regression is just about fitting dots on a given line, which could be a curve or a straight line. If it's a straight line, we call it linear regression. And so we probably remember doing that. But which one of these is the right algorithm to use to try and work out whether my flights are late or not? I don't know, because I'm not really a data scientist. I'm just fooling you, okay? I'm just a guy like you guys in the audience who mucks about with Excel and SQL and stuff like that. So the key thing you need to understand is that there are modules in-house here just to go and get you to test stuff. And if I right-click on this thing here, I need to be really accurate with my mouse to do this, and I wasn't. I've got to hit that little circle. There we go. This curve appears. Hello, curve. This curve, thank you. Right, this is called an ROC curve. And essentially, there's a straight line going up in faint gray. You can see in the middle of the screen. That's the equivalent of flipping a coin, okay? If your curve is close to that straight line, you might as well have just flipped a coin to make your decision about whether your flight's late or not. The more to the top and the left the curve is, the more accurate the prediction is. And the two algorithms I've got are both shown there. So the one in blue is the one on the left, the two-class boosted decision trees. You can see it's slightly closer to being an upside-down L shape. That's the one to use. And that's all you really need to know. And if I just scroll down a minute, Ed, if I can find the right
that one.
Mouse here. I feel like Rick Wakeman at a concert, for those of you who remember him. Just scroll down a little bit. Down here, we've now got a readout, and I'm sorry for the people in the cheap seats over there, but if we look over here, we can see true positives. That means we got it right, okay? And also true negatives. We got that right as well. The other two numbers, the false negatives and the true positives, are wrong. We got it wrong. We either thought the flight was going to be late and it turned up on time, or we thought it was going to be on time and it turned up late, okay? And there's going to be a cost associated with that, and we know what the costs are, then we can get stuff done. So this is kind of real-world kind of prediction, and this is going to kind of be based on the weather and a whole bunch of other things, and away we go. And so you can knock one of these up on your iPad, on your Surface Pro, anything that supports HTML5, bring this browser up, hit the button, try some of your data, and you can get stuff done. So I encourage you to be curious, and I encourage you to understand your business better, and I encourage you to also get some basic grounding in science, okay, the business of experimentation. Those are my learnings. So I think I'm done. Who's next?
I think it's you, Ed.
Is it me?
Is it you?
Oh, yes.
So I've got a question for you guys. Let me just switch the poll back on. Minimise that. Could you go to PP for me for a second?
I can, yes, indeed. Yeah, we'll just go back to here again.
Screen, thank you.
I've also realised that, you know, I can see you all nodding and grinning. We try and it's a bit difficult to see the whole audience here, but I imagine I mentioned the word data science and you all started nodding off. But none of you left, so that was quite good. Ed, how's the mobility thing?
So, if you want to go to the poll site now, you should see a question. Seven, yeah. How many devices do you use for work tasks? I'm not talking about issued by work, I'm talking about any device. So, for instance, I've got here an iPad Air. It's got a Microsoft Asset tag on, which is probably quite a rarity, but it's an iPad Air. I've got a Nokia 13, Lumia 1320, an issued laptop, and I've got a Surface Pro 3 in there. And they're all things I use for work. I've also got my desktop at home. I use that for work. Those are the sort of devices I'm after. To me, the most interesting point there is that there are only five of you out of 122 that have currently answered who use a single device at work. Scroll yourselves back 10 years, you probably had one device and it was bolted down at work, and that's all you ever used. Unless you had internet or ISDN at home and you could dial up to a remote modem in your workplace to be able to get stuff. So three has it. I'd be delighted to know who uses six devices. 15 of you use six different devices at work, or for work. Dan's obviously one of them. Yeah.
Yeah, he's got his... I don't think his Canon camera counts, though.
No,
maybe.
Okay.
Not yet.
So... let's move that one on.
Oh, sorry, do you want that?
Thank you. Now... we're not all going to talk about data all the time. There are three of us here, and we've each picked a topic. And I'd like to point out that we picked this topic 2 months ago, 3 months ago. If I can refer you to the keynote yesterday, we had some data science, and there was some pretty cool data science. We had masses of enterprise mobility, and Susan's going to talk to you about DevOps, which was also in the keynote, and we knew nothing about that at all. So we've just looked at the landscape of IT and thought, these are the things we're working on, these are the interesting things, let's use them. This is where it's going, fellas. So enterprise mobility. You've all just shown to me that you are using more than one device, and I can almost guarantee the question perhaps should have said devices that you wander around with, devices that aren't locked down at work, things you want to do stuff with. As you can see, I'm old. Okay, I'm happy with that, I'm old. I have used every one of those devices in my working life.
Ed, how many of those did you leave on a bus, though?
Not one.
Okay.
But if I had, I'd have been in trouble. So on the left at the top, we have an iPack. That was a good name, wasn't it? They had an iPack. That was Compax, and that was really good. That had Windows... a Windows mobile version on it. And... yes, it was Pocket PC.
Pocket PC. Well done, sir.
My brain is only so big, and when I've finished with things, they get picked up and dropped. So Pocket PC was absolutely fantastic. But if I wanted to do something, and I couldn't afford a modem to plug in the little thing at the top, I had to plug it in at work, download my events for the day, go to the meetings, make some notes, and I was really pleased I didn't have to do it twice because I could come back to work, plug it in, and it would just upload it. And it might change the calendar if the sync was working, that sort of stuff. So that was good. The Palm Pilot was what I had before that, and I saw people with an iPad and thought, I want one of those. So the Palm Pilot went in the drawer. And that was quite revolutionary at the time. It was very good, but it didn't really do anything that you can do now. If I gave any of those devices to a user now, they'd look at me in complete despair and say, I'm not using any of that. And the bottom one's a Scion. I work for a man who said his entire life worked on that Scion, and I think he's probably still using it. And I've put a USB stick in there because, and there's a chap in the room that knows far more about this than me, Mr. Bettany over there, Windows to Go. You can run your entire life on a USB stick. In fact, I know a man who presented that. Did you do the same session here, Andrew? You did. Who will not... he'll go abroad and he'll take a USB stick to do all his work, all his presentations and everything, and he'll just plug it in, boot up Windows, no access to the native hardware on the machine, such as drives, etc., and he can run his entire life. And with Windows 8.1, you log on with your Windows account and you get exactly the same desktop you have at home. And when you go home, having not done anything, you get exactly the same desktop you had last time you used. It's all pretty brilliant. And my point here...
it's secure as well, isn't it?
It's now absolutely secure. My point here is that the old devices, mobility has been around for a very long time, but the big security issues have always been there. We had to use old methods to use those devices. We had to go back to a base to plug it in. We had to have connectivity. And they worked in the old roles. In those roles, I was in professional services and I was managing a team, and I used to go out with these devices thinking I was all clever and posh and send them emails from this team, and it never went till I got home and all that sort of stuff. So I couldn't exist with those devices now and do the same job I do. For instance, I wouldn't answer the team that are sending me emails to say, can you do this, can you go there, because I wouldn't see them until I got back. What sort of skills do you need now as an IT pro, not as an end user, but as an IT pro, to manage this new environment of enterprise mobility? Well, buzzword for everybody in the room will be security. We have data. Andrew's just told us what data we can have, and he only touched the surface of data, but the data, if you lose your data as an organisation, not only are you probably going out of business, but you're probably going to get, depending on what data and what organisation you are, fined, jailed, or both. You know, the days, and a lot of this has been driven by the days when, in certain military conflicts that the UK's been involved in, people leaving laptops in the back of taxis which weren't encrypted. People sending disks out with personal identifiable information, which wasn't encrypted.
And the sales guys running off with your customer list to a competitor was also a bit of a problem.
Yes, people going down the phone list and you moving off with data. So we want to be able to have total security and control of our data. But I've just said the users are not going to want to go back back to the days of that, where they've got devices they can't do anything with. They would throw them back at you. If you give them a device, they want to be able to use it. So I would imagine everybody in the room here is tweeting, Facebooking, using their email, checking their review scores from the last session, which will be at least 5.5, I'm sure. So, I've gone on one too far. Security is key, keeping your data secure and making sure that people who are using your data don't walk away with it. To be able to do that, we have to enable some form of device management. Now, there are lots of tools, both hybrid and cloud-only, that can enable device management. And the way we've set this session up is we get 15 minutes to stand here and talk what we like talking about with a small demo at the end. Now, there's no way I could give you an end-to-end demonstration of the back-end version of what I'm going to show you. So I'm going to show you what the user uses now with some of our solutions a bit later. But the back-end, you still need to manage these device management solutions. We have Windows, Microsoft Intune as of yesterday or the day before. And that's Microsoft Intune because it no longer only manages Windows, it manages iOS, it manages Android, it manages...
Oh, it managed iOS and Android for a while. It was confusing being called Windows Intune, so being called Microsoft Intune.
Now, I've used that tool as a partner before I joined Microsoft to manage 10 individual businesses, and it changed my life. I used to visit at least once a week to every single customer. Didn't have to do it anymore. And that was from one subscription. It was brilliant. And it's getting better, and there are some big changes coming down the road very soon. Networking. Now, I had a bit of a sulk earlier, and I've put networking in here. That slide Andrew showed about servers and people not needing to know this stuff, I disagree entirely. Even if the roles are changing, even if everything's in the cloud, you certainly need to know your basic networking skills. You need to know TCP/IP. You need to know IP addressing. So I'm going to reveal something now. I used Azure when it first came out, was first publicly available, and I thought, this is brilliant. I'm going to put a DC in the cloud. Did that. Everybody knows if you're using a DC, the first thing about networking on a DC, it has to have a static IP address. Makes sense. Went into Azure, looked at the IP, that's not static. Turned it static, never saw my DC again because it took it out of my control.
Classic.
You're not
going to
read the manual, are you, Ed?
Well, I didn't work. Manual? It's a DC and it was a client. I did it. So you absolutely need to develop your networking skills to understand all this software-defined networking we're talking about and how we manage these solutions so that you can still do this, even if it's not on your own network. So networking is key. Device management, being able to control policies. I imagine since 90% of the largest organizations in the world use Active Directory, I imagine 90% of those users are also controlled by group policy. And group policy is the easiest way to control both users and devices in any environment, any enterprise environment. So you're still going to need your device management skills. If you have a hybrid solution, you can use System Center Config Manager 2012 R2 or above as we release them to integrate into Microsoft Intune to have a hybrid solution as well. So we have lots and lots of tools available. Who's got a glass? Google Glass? Anybody got a Google Glass? Anybody seen a Google Glass? Used a Google Glass? Okay, I've got a few hands up there. I've not seen it, touched it, or used it, but I imagine I'm an avid motorcycle rider, and I absolutely hate looking down at my dashboard, my clock. I want head-up display in my helmet. They exist, they're expensive, they're a bit quirky, but I can't quite imagine having head-up display for my life as I'm walking along and seeing things. We'll get there eventually, I'm sure. But these devices are all going to have, take, and control massive amounts of data that we need to secure and eventually, if you want to use them for work, manage. So the methods we have to employ to control this stuff absolutely need managing by us. Enterprise mobility from the user perspective.
This is where it gets interesting.
This is where it gets somewhat interesting.
How many devices are you going to demo on, Ed?
I'm going to be using...
iPad?
Three devices. No, I'm not touching the iPad. I'm going to go, first of all, to this baby.
It is your iPad.
Now, I was very lucky. In Microsoft, there's a similar thing to this called Tech Ready, where the technical field go out once every 12 months and it's run every 6 months. And I turned up there with my brand... I had my laptop and I had my Surface Pro 2... Surface Pro, actually. I came back with a Surface Pro 3 and an iPad Air. It was great. I didn't even know I was getting any of that.
Hey.
So here I have an iPad Air. This iPad Air is not currently...
What's he doing? Are you tweeting, buddy?
No, so that's one of my standard tweet things. So I have here, if I take you to settings, and just because the demo gods hate me, it decided to tell me 8.1 was available 2 hours before the demo. I haven't done it. But you'll see that under profiles, I have nothing. I'm not connected to any sort of environment. I have just a standard out of the box with a few applications on. Imagine this. I come to you as an IT manager and I say, I would like, please, to use this, not as my main device, but I really am going to be going on holiday and you want me to work while I'm on holiday. I need this device. I want to be able to access our fantastic SharePoint internal site. I'm not going to put direct access on this. It's not going to work because it's not our device. I don't want to faff around with VPNs and stuff like that. I want you to manage it for me. I want
you
to do this.
And also, we don't want to expose our whole website to the net. I mean,
well, obviously, it's an internal resource. It's going to stay an internal resource.
You can imagine, a few years ago, HM the Queen would have done this. You know, she's got an iPad.
Thank you for that one, Dan, whatever that was. Thank you, Dan.
And she's got this thing. So going into her IT department, do you think the IT department that will work for her are going to say, no, you can't do this? Probably career limiting. We are talking about careers here. So how do we make it work securely?
So what I'm going to do...
It doesn't work for Contoso either, by the way.
...is clear out... Oh, it's a nice curry. Clear out Words for Friends. You can tell, this is a device I use at home, fellas. This is my work-provided play toy. So I'm going to go in and I'm going to run for you Safari. If you have one of these devices... If you have one of these devices... Let me go in again.
Disney.
That's better. So if you have one of these devices and you do what I did, which was put Chrome on it, you can never do any of this stuff with Chrome. Another not reading the manual, I ran this demo for somebody, did this through Chrome, and I never got anything back from the Apple notification system because it will only notify Safari.
Safari Sagiddy.
I did ask for support and got told, don't do that. So here we have a customized entry point into my work environment. I have asked to go to my SharePoint.contoso.com website. It's not let me. It's basically said, you can't do that, Ed. That's silly. Sign in with my username and ID, and it says, you can't do that. You're on an iOS device. Click here. What that will do, it will send to the notification service a request to pull down a profile and a number of certificates to allow me access to my internal systems on an iPad. It's not domain joined. I have no user account on this iPad connected to my work environment.
So what will this give you then, Ed?
This will give me another sign-in, obviously.
Yes.
And in a minute, it will say, I've set this demo up for multi-factor authentication.
Have you got a signal?
I have a huge signal.
Good.
Yeah, we've got special bandwidth out the front, so this should all work. That's probably the kiss of death, though.
And this worked 20 minutes ago in the...
Oh.
There you go. So I did try and get this connected. This is a 1320, which doesn't... The thing I was going to demonstrate to you was the Miracast use of a Lumia. This, because I wasn't given the right devices, not the right system. So I have on here a wonderful application, which I'm waving at you, called Microsoft Multi-Factor Authentication App. This app will multi-factor authenticate any device, any authorization on any system, not just Microsoft. So I could do Facebook, Google, Amazon, anything on this.
But obviously, this is an educated audience. So they've got Lumias, right? But
obviously,
some of them haven't.
It's available on Android. I actually don't know if it's available on iPhone. It must be. MFA on iPhone? Must be.
Must be.
Yes.
So all I'm going to do, it says, somebody has asked you to verify that you are who you are. I know this is your phone. I know this is you because you've got your credentials in here. And it says verify, cancel and report fraud. So I'm just going to click verify.
Woohoo.
And as if by magic stuff... It then goes back to my Active Directory Federation services. Remember, I'm doing this from the user end, so they don't know that I've got a wonderful domain, I've got ADFS, I've got certificate services, I've got all that really good server-hugging stuff I don't have to use. But you guys need to know all of that to give your users this permission, which was the whole point of the demo.
So ADFS, AD skills, still super important in this modern world, Ed, yeah?
It is.
So what's it doing now, Ed?
It's now going to my Active Directory Federation services, to a website, to pull down the necessary certificates and profile using the over-the-air service to grab for me what I need. But this is the one bit we're not responsible for. This is the air bit.
Hello? It's...
So while that's doing that, it's Apple. I'll let it do it in its own time. I'll take you to the other demo I've got, because I haven't got... I don't want... And Andrew's sitting there with a clock, and he's going to grab me and...
No. You're fine.
OK, so if I go to number 6... is moving, but slowly. Here you have what I imagine 90% of you are using on one machine in your environment. This is a virtual machine running on Windows 10 and running Windows 10 in the virtual machine. Okay? This build is the original 9841, not for any reason, and I haven't upgraded that one. No, it'll take a while. Don't worry. I'll move on to this one. Okay. So imagine I don't want access to the internal resources, but I do want to be able to write some documents, edit some documents, and not have them on my device any longer than I need them. But more importantly, I need them back in my work environment, on a file server, somewhere safe, protected by NTFS, protected by BitLocker, protected by all sorts of other good stuff. So here I have, using the Windows key, I'm just going to type work, because it's something to do with work. So you see work folders comes up and manage work folders. I'm going to touch work folder. I'm going to do that again. Not try and be clever. Is that Dan again?
No. That's one of your friends just saying that he hopes the demo's going to work.
Isn't live communication fantastic? So we have here work folders. Now, the work folders solution is available in Windows 8, 8.1, and Windows 7 as well, but you implement it in Windows 7 in a slightly different way. And what... Just leave that for a second. And what this is going to do is it's going to provide for me a folder on my own local file system in which I can save documents, which will be stored remotely as well and synchronized, so they can be shared as well within my environment. But the most important thing is that when I decide, or my manager decides, he doesn't want them on my device anymore, we can flick a switch and they will be removed without us being able to use them. So I have a device that isn't domain joined, it doesn't belong to the firm, it's not got any of my normal user IDs or credentials from work. So here I just select set up work folders.
Out of interest, how many of you do use work folders already?
How many use workplace join? Excellent. You will be needing to. It then asks me to verify my credentials with my Active Directory server back home. And it's going away and saying, right, there is a server somewhere in your environment that holds your work folders. I'm creating a folder for you, or will do shortly. And there we have. It gives me the opportunity now to choose which of my drives and which folder I want to store my work folders. I'm going to set the default of users ed work folders, because I'm not very creative. And it then says, okay, the fact that you want to do this tells me that I now need to manage certain parts of your machine. I'm going to encrypt those work folders. You can't touch them, I'm going to encrypt them. I'm going to require a password. If there isn't one currently on your system, I now need a password to log on. So when you leave this on the bus, thank you, when you leave it on the bus, nobody can use your documents. And also it gives you the ability as a manager or as an IT pro to erase completely all of those work folders if I lose it.
So sort of partial wipe rather than the full wipe of the machine then, Ed?
Yes. Now, there's a very small line here that says, additionally, files stored in work folders are subject to your organisation's data policies. You are agreeing to something that could have an effect on your HR department or your organisation. So if you drop something in that folder that you shouldn't have or that you shouldn't have looked at, whatever it might be, In Dan's case, it's lots of Formula One cars and that sort of stuff. If you drop something in there, it will be replicated and synchronised into your environment. If that breaches policy in your environment, you have breached policy in your environment. So but it's your device, so be aware of that if you use it.
So my key learning there, actually, is that your new best friend, and this might sound really scary, might be the HR department, because you want to have a conversation with those guys as you implement these policies, because this is actually can be, you know, there's compliance issues anyway with the legal framework in the country that you guys work in. And those guys are going to know about that stuff, and if they start getting people to do the right thing...
So, I now have work folders synchronising, and it opens the folder for me. It also tells me some interesting stuff. I've got 49 megs, not a big file share, but I've got 49 meg available, and it's synchronising. And anything I drop, because I'm doing the user front end, I can't show you it on the back end, because I don't have those available, it would synchronise them into a file server of my choice back in my environment. Any errors are there, I can ask for technical support, I can do all sorts of things I need to do there. So that's work folders. Okay. Let me have a look at the workplace join one before we finish. I'll show my embarrassing one. Is that that one? It hasn't come down. That's interesting.
Should we have a look at that in a bit?
Yeah, you carry on.
I'll
come back. You're watching the clock.
Forms.
We're on the clock now. So there's half a demonstration of workplace join, which worked 20 minutes ago and will work before the end of the session, and a demonstration of work folders to just show how you need to understand the core technical skills behind them to give your users the right and the ability to use enterprise mobility effectively. It's no good if it's not effective. If you're over cautious on the policies, it's not going to work. So the next one is that one.
Yeah, we're not really good DJs here at mixing these feeds in.
I'm going to hand you over to Susan, who's going to tell you something called DevOps.
Okay, so words you never thought you'd hear, DevOps. This is going to be the really fun part of the presentation. Sorry, guys. So before we start, we do have a survey question for you.
Oh, yes, my apologies. No, don't worry. Don't worry about that. Some people, I apologise, I've not. It's obviously too live, and people have got into this and answered this already. The rest of you that haven't.
Okay, so the question is, did you clap when Joe Belfiore cut and pasted from a command window?
I did.
For all the techies out there, it was something that really, really look forward to, although it will be hard to...
Or did you say, about damn time?
No, not at all.
I guess a few of these people were in... Aidan's session beforehand? Anybody stay in the room? Okay then, that's a good thing. Not that they weren't in your session, sorry buddy, but.
Okay, so it was quite a popular thing that we've announced now. Shall we just move on? Okay, so DevOps. DevOps means different things to different people. So the way I like to explain it is, in the old days, you had developers who worked on an application, they made it beautiful, they polished it, then they wrapped it up and they threw it over to operations. Operations got it and were scratching their heads going, what do I do with it? Well, the developers ran away. So that didn't work very well. So now DevOps is more of a collaboration where developers and operations work together, so we have this continuous improvement. And with the more rapid release cycles we've got now, it's in our interest to be able to talk to one another. Now, there's another way of explaining it. So we've hired a couple of really good actresses, so just to demonstrate bad and good DevOps, just to give you a real feel of what it's really like.
Oops. Just go and click on it, yeah.
I've just created this brilliant app, but I'll bet your ops is going to mess it up once again. Oh look, Dev looks like she's just created an app.
Bet it won't work in my environment once again.
Hey, Art.
Hey, Dirk, how's it going?
Well, I've just built this really great business application. Will you help me deploy it?
Sure, come on over.
We need a spotlight now to point Rennie over there.
So I think the key takeaway from that video is just to show that collaboration is key, and if we work together, it is for the greater good. So DevOps is more than just application lifecycle management, where you create an app, deploy it, and then it's done. It's the whole, it's bigger than that, because once it's out in the wild, how do you, if there's anything wrong, how do you amend it? If there's a way of enhancing it, how do you feedback the loop? So there's I've done lots of research of the DevOps careers out there. So if you look at like different DevOps job specs now, a lot of it will ask for scripting. It doesn't matter what language you script in, as long as you know the basic principles of scripting and being able to use the right tool for the job, being able to know multiple operating systems, so Linux, Windows, that sort of thing, and having a really deep knowledge of that. So effectively, it's all the stuff that you've grown to know over the years, so your toolkit just gets bigger and bigger. So as you saw from that video, collaboration is key. So you don't just have to be good at scripting, you've got to be good at talking to people as well. Security is a big thing, because obviously we want to make the environment compliant. And infrastructure as code is quite a new thing as well. Previously, you'd manually do it, but now automation is the key. You want to be able to repeat it, and you want it to be able to work and guarantee and just take out the human error part of it. Talking to some customers who practice DevOps, and they were saying the benefits of like infrastructure as code and being able to automate their environment. Once they were so pleased with their environment, they pressed a button, went out to lunch. They automated the downfall of their environment. But what was good, when they came back from lunch, they realized that they just had to go back to the previous version instead of having to cry and explain to their boss why they'd gone out to lunch and all that stuff. So as I was saying, scripting is like quite a key part of it. If you look at DevOps roles now, there's a variety of different things, and you don't have to have all the skills. You've just got a really good broad knowledge. And as I was saying before, it's like developers and operations working together. So if you're an operations person who knows a bit of code, if you're a developer who knows about operations, that's the kind of team that you'd probably work well in. And conflict resolution, that was kind of a repeated theme, which means maybe when you start your role, you get a referee's shirt and a whistle, because you've got to go in and smooth things over and being able to see the vision and push things forward rather than getting involved where, though it's not working, it's their fault, this fault. So that's why I put Kofi Annan in there as well. Another thing when you look at DevOps job roles, a key thing they're asking for now is you've got to be quite prominent in the DevOps space, so people have got to know who you are. In London, there's lots of DevOps meetups which you go to, and it's a really good community. Everyone contributes really, really well. And if you go and present at those, and if you're well known there, it will help you if you wanted a role in the DevOps space. Okay, so I do and I don't apologize for this slide. It's like got quite a lot of detail in there, but this is just to show you the Microsoft tools for DevOps that you could use. Now, so there's all different environments. So you've got develop, and obviously it doesn't just start from left to right. It's kind of like an iterative process. So you develop and build, and then you deploy, and you've got all your different environments, and then you monitor and learn, and then it feeds back again. And underneath, you can see all the different software that we've got which underlies that. Now, you know, in an ideal world, I can go into a customer and they go, okay, just put all your Microsoft stuff in and that would be lovely and we'll just rip out all the stuff that we've invested in. Obviously, that would be nice, but obviously this is the real world.
You realise you've just made his day. He's got Microsoft Azure Machine Learning.
Yeah, but I suspect that's actually Microsoft Assistance Markup Language. So you do need to know what you're doing, right, with data science, because you can end up in a wrong job. That's how we write help files and so on, isn't it? Apps, I think, Susan, yeah.
Oh, I thought it was just a mammal, sorry.
Okay.
Okay, so that's the Microsoft ecosystem. And then this is the heterogeneous ecosystem. So what I really like about DevOps is you find a piece of software and you think that's not a real name of software. So we've got Vagrant, we've got Grunt, we've got Puppet, we've got Chef, we've got Git. Anything that you hear of and think it's not real, it probably does belong in the DevOps space. So this is kind of like the open source version of what Microsoft has. And I'd like to do another slide which has them both integrated, but it gets quite messy. But I think you can see where all the touch points are. And, you know, we've got develop, build, deploy, and then the monitor and learn.
Yeah, so I was actually on that hybrid thing. What I saw was that there's this open management OMI instead of WMI, and I think Jeffrey Snove is doing a session on how he's using that technology to manage a top-of-rack switch, because we tend to think of the blend of these two guys. One is, you know, we've got open source over there, but then you kind of think, well, there's these devices that are part of our fabric that we need to manage, and we kind of need to understand that's code, even if we live in a totally Microsoft world. So,
Ready? Yeah,
we need to probably work on the marketing slides on those too. Before, join them up a bit.
Before I hand over to this demo, it's work now. And I will show it to you before we finish. Carry on.
Okay, so to be able to demo DevOps, you know, there's many different things you could do, but because I've only got a couple of minutes, what I've got is a retail site, and what I'm going to show you is how we slow the SQL query down.
What?
To the site. I'm sorry. Just don't listen. Just cover your ears. It's okay. So we'll kind of fabricate an issue. So here's the website here, and if I F5 it, it's relatively quick. So if I go here, this is where I can start slowing things down. So I'm going to cause a SQL delay of 7 times. So if I go back here, then you'll see that, you know, it will work eventually, but it's really, really slow. Now, traditionally, when you had that issue, you get a call from the service desk, and ops go, I've not done anything, and the developers go, oh, that's not my fault. And so in order to stop that and, you know, be able to collaborate and make it all work again, you would have something like Ops Manager, which would track this. So as I was saying before, you build your toolkit up over the years. So a few years ago, I used to be an Ops Manager consultant, so it's kind of like revisiting an old friend, being able to use this in this environment. So I've got an alert here which is saying that the website is running really, really slow. And if I click on here, it will actually show me, hopefully. Sorry about this. I really can't multitask.
I'm not going to say anything, Susan.
Oh, yeah. So this will then take you through and show you what exactly is the problem. And so, again, as you're with your referee shirt, you'd go in and go, it's a SQL query, it's not very efficient, we need to optimize it. So that would make it a lot easier. And the way we can integrate the different tool set, we can send it to engineering. So I've assigned it to engineering. So now, slightly different, if we go here, and hopefully this did and did not work, it's not going to work. So this is just a Team Foundation server, and what normally happens is it will come up and say, right, there's an issue, and I'm going to assign it to an engineer. There's a connector back to Operations Manager. So once the engineer has, and I'll show you what we do at the back end, we would make SQL work properly again. And we F5 that, and it all works beautifully. In Team Foundation Server, if this thing. We resolve it, and then if you go back into Ops Manager, you can see the alert would be cleared. And this is how you know you kind of have those different things in your environment which will work together in order to being able to resume service as quickly as possible.
Thank you, Susan. That was one of my old friends, and I love all those graphs as well, because sometimes the other problem is it's not actually a problem inside the app. It's the wider fabric as well, like networking and so on. So you can, even within the IT pro team, you need to kind of have that DevOps mentality of joining up different disciplines, the SAN engineer talking to the SQL expert, talking to the networking guy.
So for those of you that didn't believe it would ever work, it did in the background. Apple finally got their act together and it worked. Here we have a workplace join on an iOS device. It's downloaded a set of certificates for me, which will now give me access within my organization to my SharePoint site, which is an internal SharePoint site. That's available on Windows 8.1 as well and Windows 8. It is much easier to configure that because it's native technology. Just to show you, it does work. It just was rather slow, unfortunately.
Thank you, Ed.
Which gives us perfect timing.
Well, I think there's a couple of things I picked out from our three sessions was that there's some common themes running on here. Whether you're in DevOps, whether you're interested in data science, whether you're interested in mobility, you've got to be working a lot more closely with the business than we ever used to. We've got to understand what they're trying to do instead of actually just maybe being... I've worked in IT departments that are in completely different buildings, sometimes in a different town from where the business decisions are made. And if we're in that position, we can't be as agile and part of that decision-making process. So there's a huge opportunity when somebody comes into you with a new device to really shine and start actually doing what I hate to admit we have to do, and that's market ourselves a little bit better. All of these tools are about that. It's not just coming up with the idea yourself, but being able to present this. You may have been to a session, for example, on Windows Server 2003, end of life. Well, you probably want to get off Windows Server 2003, the people of you that are in here. Well, how do you do that? What skills do you need to bring to bear? Well, you need to build a business case. You need to have a word and market the idea rather than actually just grumbling about it around the coffee point and so on and so forth. So we kind of think that the soft skills of the different disciplines we've discussed are just as important as the technologies.
So what we've set up for you, and we're conscious that lunch comes straight after this, so we won't take all of your time. We ran a competition for people to come to TechEd. Free, hotels, flights, everything else, and the lucky winners are down there, and they're all IT pros. And we've set up now a chance for you guys to talk not only to us who do stuff other than IT pro stuff, to our IT pro competition winners. We've only got two microphones here, and if you have a question, we only have one microphone in the room there, and please, we can't hear or answer any questions that don't come through that microphone. So if I could invite the winners of our competition, plus Aidan, who's an MVP in lots of technical stuff and was presenting in here before. Hyper-V, is it? Yeah, he's a Hyper-V MVP, one of our Microsoft most valuable professionals. Do you want to introduce our panel?
Indeed. Well, we've got these guys actually all interestingly have worked for partners. We've worked with them over a number of years. And what did Jess, come and tell us what you did. How did you get here?
So we were asked to submit videos, so talking about technology in a bunch of different categories. So we each submitted in different categories. And it's all trying to talk about the technology, but in an interesting or a fun way. So I did lots of dropping of juggling balls.
And Jess, you're more on the sort of data side of things, I guess, are you?
History, lots of BI, also doing lots around SharePoint and Office 365 these days.
Okay. Peter, what do you do for a living?
So I'm a system center consultant for one of the partners. Too loud.
So you know how to do that operations manager thing we just saw?
Yeah, I'm very much in Ed's sort of line of work. I can do those sort of things for you. And the video that I did was around enterprise client management in unified device management. So combining Microsoft Intune and Configuration Manager.
Cool. Jamie? Tell us a bit about yourself.
Yeah, hi, I'm Jamie.
Nobody's coming up to the microphone. I don't know what you said.
Well, someone has said. So I'm a system center consultant that works for a Microsoft partner. How I got here, I did a similar kind of, in my video, demonstration to what Susan did around DevOps and application performance monitoring. That's a massive thing we're seeing at the minute, getting that a lot from our customers. That's what I'm spending the majority of my time doing at the moment. So, if you've got any questions around that, sort of. Give me a shout.
But they're not asking. And obviously, we were watching Aidan with awe yesterday, rocking with PowerShell. We totally get you, man.
Thank you.
So we thought you might want to ask us about how do you maybe get to where you want to go? What resources do you use? I'm going to ask you a question. So what keeps you up to date with technology? Somebody, anybody, come and grab a microphone, shout at me.
Feedly. There's a lot of stuff out there, and I spend a lot of time evangelizing Azure and hybrid cloud and keeping up with the rate of change in something as big as Azure and Microsoft Sprint development. It's difficult. So I use a subscription service, and I have a lot of blog feeds that I read every morning, and I accumulate that stuff and share it via my blog, and you know, there's other people doing the same things. So there's a lot of material out there, and it is difficult to keep up with the rate of change, but someone has to.
So I'm going to put Jess on the spot here, because I've got a question you guys aren't asking. Right, how do you find time to make space to learn stuff when you're maxed out at work?
So with difficulty is the short answer, but I try and make sure I actually set aside a time, so actually block some time in the diary and say, okay, I am going to spend that time watching the videos on Virtual Academy, playing with stuff, trying things out, and just don't let other people block meetings in that time. If they try to move it, don't let it get deleted, otherwise you're lost.
Okay, sir, sorry, shout out.
Question from the floor.
Hi. What do the panel recommend in the way of qualifications? Do you think they're important to an IT pro's career, or are they a distraction?
Can I answer this one to start with? So in my former role and now in my role now, I'm a Microsoft certified trainer, and I'm one of the regional leads for the UK, as is. Oh, he's gone. There was another regional lead for the UK. So we evangelise about certification. So the best thing I can suggest for you, if you want to keep up with the very, very current stuff, is to get yourself onto the Microsoft Connect website, create a profile for yourself, including all the topics you're interested in, and the odds are you will get invited to beta exams as well, which means you can take the exams before they're live. But absolutely, certification for employers is a big thing. There's steps above certification when Microsoft look at you and go, you know, you're a level above in technology and you get awarded MVP status. But certainly, if you want to be an MCP, get qualifications there. There are exam levels from 100 all the way up to, I'd say, they're now at 400, some of them now. So certification all the way. And if you want to stop behind, I can give you, there's a brilliant app on Windows 8, the Microsoft Learning app, that will tell you all the exams available in all the areas.
And you're doing a slot on training as well, Ed?
Yes, I'm on the Microsoft Learning site on Friday, talking about Windows 8 MCSA and the new MCSE that's coming in for Windows 8 as well. So there's masses of exams, masses of certification you can do, and they're now making it harder to be what's called a paper MCSE. Yeah. So you can't just cheat as easily as you could before.
Peter, yeah, go.
So one of the things that I can add to that, as a consultant who works for a Microsoft Gold partner, there's certain requirements to meet as a partner. So obviously the exams and the certifications that we need to do are matched by Microsoft depending on which type of partner you are. And as you can see on the front there, there's a lot of little sort of figures. So that's Microsoft Virtual Academy. So there's a lot of great stuff on there as well. So there's like training videos that are produced by Microsoft staff and external people as well. So obviously that's real good stuff for getting the certifications.
And actually we got a question yesterday I picked up where if you're trying to get certified and the course is not on MVA, maybe you want to do one of those new Azure exams and you're saying, what do I do? Well, the simple thing is you're at TechEd, right? Well, the guys who are running MVA are here. You know that Channel 9 booth down there? Go and hassle some of those guys and get your course nominated. They might send you a T-shirt or something. And because if you're thinking there's something missing on MVA, probably everybody else does. And certainly we look at that as well, and we're happy to knock up content because it's like just for you guys to learn, right? My wife's an accountant, and as an accountant, and I was talking to... Where is Marcus? He's disappeared. Marcus's wife's a solicitor. Those guys in those professions do continued professional development. They have to, in order to be members of their professional bodies, they have to go and study so much every year and do courses. Yeah? Why don't we do that in IT? And also, if you have driven here or, you know, own a car maybe, you probably want that fixed by somebody who knows what they're doing. So we tend to think about people having their own sort of qualifications and being certified in some way to operate machinery. You know, one of my friends does pressure testing on big industrial plants. He has loads of qualifications in order to do that. And every year will go and sign off that that particular installation is absolutely working. Well, they're certified as well, and we're engineers, aren't we? So should we be doing this stuff? Or should we just let anybody have a go? And should we keep up to date with our current skills? I guess you're all here, so I'm preaching to the choir a little bit, but maybe for the people watching the video who couldn't make it, something to think about as well. Discuss. So I think we need to all do the lifelong learning thing, especially as the rate of change picks up. Have you got any more questions, guys? It's like a waffle.
Just echo they all want lunch. The Microsoft qualifications as a gold partner of sales with Microsoft. We have to keep up the amount of certified people we have, and that's a key thing that we look for when we're recruiting. So I think keeping up with Microsoft qualifications, if you haven't got it in a minute, start to look to get them.
So I think we've already teased out the MVA thing, haven't we? I think we've got some resources up here. We've already talked about Born to Learn. The other one I think that's in my toolbox, and I alluded to it earlier, that I blew out my MSDN subscription Azure hours in preparing for this. Bad idea. But use those hours, yeah? And use your MSDN subscription. And then you're going to tell me, oh, I haven't got one. Who hasn't got one? The people are left shamelessly. Right, well, that's the business case back to the boss. Because again, if I think about somebody coming round to do some work on my house, I expect a painter to bring his own paintbrushes. I expect the plumber to bring his own spanners and not use mine. And this is your toolkit that you hang on your belt and take with you and do stuff. And if you haven't got the tin to use, then we've got Azure for a lot of those things, to build virtual machines and sharpen our PowerShell skills and, you know, shut those VMs down again with a bit of PowerShell so you don't burn your hours like Andrew did, yeah, because he didn't go to Aidan's session, yeah? So have a look at that as well. Any final comments, guys, while I'm me doing all the talking?
Just about done. That's unusual.
Yeah, it's very unusual.
So, Channel 9, of course, the Channel 9 studios here. There's more content coming out on Channel 9 all the time. A lot of it's very good, and it's not just in core areas, it's all the way across the spectrum. So if you're a developer there as well, MSDN. MSDN isn't just a subscription, it's a huge, great resource of information, as is TechNet. But the other thing you can do is, of course, follow your local Microsoft evangelists on Twitter, follow some of the MVPs on Twitter. You'll find lots of useful resources, lots of good blogs. As Aidan said, first thing he does in the morning, because I see him do it, because he comments on the blogs he reads first in the morning on Twitter, he'll spend an hour, maybe longer, reading those blogs, swearing at them, shouting at them, agreeing with them sometimes, unless it's VMware.
And find the evangelists and give them coffee. With enough caffeine, they will talk for hours about everything that is new.
That we can.
Yes, absolutely. That we can. Yeah. Right, let's give some time back then, guys. Go and have some lunch. Go to some sessions armed with this knowledge. We've given you a few
finally,
pointers
though,
of what you'd like to do. Oh, yeah, you have to do that.
The ways of giving an evaluation, please do, because we want to know. This is not a hugely technical session, but we hope it's a useful session. And the best way for us to know that is to let us know on the evaluation. Good or bad, let us know. You can do it on your schedule builder. You can do it in the mobile app. Or you can take a quick shot of that QR code. Should be outside as well.
Yeah.
Although they may have changed that now because it'd be lunchtime, but
we'll have a word with them, see if we can do it live next time. I think that'd be so much fun, wouldn't it? You could all check in and give us
a
score. And
use
then we
a poll. So if you have no other questions, guys, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of your Tech Ed, and thank you for listening.